This Comic Before You Die, the podcast where we help you put together the world's greatest comic book collection. Probably. In each episode, we're going to present a comic series or graphic novel that we feel deserves a place in your collection. Stick with us and we'll transform your life, help you to earn the respect of your peers, and give you a collection of books that would make Ron Burgundy jealous.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to the BAM Comic Cast Presents.
Nice.
Read this comic before you die. You're not dying. It's just clever marketing. But the
pressure.
The clock's ticking. You only got so long to read all these millions of comics out there. But don't worry. Do not worry. We are here to help you pick out the cream of the cream, as the saying goes. Yeah, we're here. That's our job. We're going to pick out the very best comics so you don't have to. Well, you do have to. You have to basically read whatever we tell you to read. But, you know, you can bring this up in the office and pretend you know a lot more about comics than you do. That's weird. Think of us as your comics cheat sheet.
Yeah, your spark notes. Is that an American thing, though? I don't know.
No, that's good. Keep it in, though, because we can be like spark notes and...
Spark notes and crib sheets.
I've heard of Cliff's Notes.
Cliff's Notes. That's what I'm thinking of.
So there's someone in America sitting there with their Stetson on going, hot diggity dog, they talk what like I do.
In that accent.
I'm going to listen to this podcast. I'm going to listen to this podcast when I'm down with gold mine in the Wild West.
What do you think America's like?
Listen.
You've been there.
Listen, I've certainly more than been there. I bloody married one.
This podcast is going off track. This is like...
No, it's not.
This is our alternative podcast.
It brings us...
I married an American.
But also...
Also on the BAM network.
No, I was going to say, who do you find... I was trying to make a link to the X-Men.
Sorry.
Because they're American, isn't it?
Ah, that's tenuous. It's good, though.
It's in upstate New York.
They started American. We're already getting off.
Now they're international and interdimensional.
But what X-Men are we going to talk about? I mean, there's like a whole plethora.
God, there's too much.
40, 50 years worth of stuff?
1963, is it? So
yeah.
Coming up to... That's math I can't do.
If only there was some way that there was a way to tie all these alternative X-Men publications, timelines, and alternative histories into one fun publication.
Well, thank God. Someone's done it.
And that man is Ed Piskor.
Great name.
With X-Men Grand Design.
X-Men Grand Design.
And it's here. Listen to this, everyone. Listen to this. It's massive.
It also smells really good.
It does smell good.
It does smell good.
If I had to mark it out of 10 for smells, definitely 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
So,
straight in there.
So X-Men Grand Design. I guess probably do a little bit of background on Ed Piskor, because I haven't seen his stuff before, because he's famous for doing the hip-hop family tree.
Yeah.
So that's not my genre of music. If it was heavy metal family tree, I'll be all over that.
You'd be all on there. But like, yeah, I mean, Ed Piskor, what a character. That's what I enjoyed most about researching this one, is watching all the interviews with Ed. Like, he is definitely a character. You can tell very much that he's a big hip-hop fan. It's how he dresses. But he's got some personality to him. And yeah, he just took a massive genre like that and managed to compile a cohesive history of it. So who better to tackle the X-Men?
Yeah, and what I've known about the Hip-Hop Family Tree series, it's kind of done in the Marvel Treasury style, which is the giant format that they used to champion in the 70s, where it's like reprinting classic stuff. So it's clear that he is a fan of the Marvel style.
Yeah.
So the story goes, he... pitched Marvel because he did like a sketch of the X-Men. I think it was like a Wolverine versus a Sentinel, I think, was the story. And basically said, when are you let me have a go at the X-Men? And apparently within a day...
I'd love it if that's what he just said, but lads, come on. When
it's really not how he talks at all.
It's in my time.
Yeah.
So yeah, his idea was to kind of take, I think it's like the first 280-odd issues of Uncanny X-Men, plus... the New Mutant stuff that was in the 80s. And there was a series called Classic X-Men, which, if I remember rightly, reprinted the run of the newer X-Men, which included that guy Wolverine that you may have heard of.
Rings a bell.
But it also had like backup strips, which kind of supplied new background on some of the characters, but, you know, set in the past. So what he's trying to do with Grand Design is do this in a chronological order. So all the stuff that Chris Claremont, the famous X-Men writer, kind of added in the 70s and 80s, of here's what Charles did in the past, he's literally kind of streamlined that.
So you can't see Charles. Charles, my helmet! We'll come to that. We'll come to that. But no, it is an incredible task. Yeah. Like, it's been a running joke amongst us and our peers that just the X-Men is almost impenetrable. It's so convoluted now.
Yeah.
It's an impossible job, and somehow Pisker's done it.
Yeah, and it kind of it speaks to me because he is, like I say, the first 280 issues were kind of my era. That's the stuff I really liked. And I kind of tapped out not long after that. So that would be like 91, 92 because it became too complicated. And Chris Claremont left.
Yeah.
And he used to get a lot of stick back in those days of being, oh, he never used to finish storylines. He'd seed plots that would come to fruition like 5 years later or so. I love that.
Yeah.
Because it still felt
cohesive.
Playing
a long game, huh?
Yeah, definitely playing a long game. But I think it's probably the example you could find in TV was something like Lost where you had to kind of
come on now,
dive
in. That wasn't planned.
Wow.
And I'm a huge Lost fan.
No,
you mean ideas that are seeded and then come to fruition. I'd like that though. That's what they're doing heavily with the MCU right now. It's like
stuff absolutely.
That gets referred to, you know, in Iron Man. They said they're tying up every plot point, which is insane to me.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where it's worked. And I think as a lapsed X-Men fan, I think the stuff I see now, I kind of dip in and dip out and I've got no real clue. And it almost feels like it's a separate universe now. Like the you know, Cyclops and Storm that I grew up reading, the ones that are out there now, they change. Whoever comes on board of the creative team. But anyway, Back to Grand Design.
Sorry, I just thought for the cover art for this episode, it should just literally be someone's hand with the handwritten, like, not Magneto's boat.
Yes.
Enough Lost talk. But back to...
Let's do a Lost podcast.
Working on it. This also on the BAM network. Remember Lost? Us neither. But yeah, X-Men Grand Design. So you said you were in with the X-Men from the start.
Well, I say the start, I'm not that old. But what I found interesting, I remember either reading or hearing an interview of Ed Piskor, and he said when he was starting reading the X-Men, he's like 10 years younger than me, but he was reading in the, I'm guessing, the 80s.
Yeah.
And he was reading the current issues
and
also reading the old stuff as well.
Just smart.
Because my first X-Men comic was a British reprint series from, I think it was 83. It was a weekly, and it adapted the very, very first issue. So Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and the original lineup.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to read those, and then I think I found like an American comic book in one of like the UK W.H. Smiths. They used to get bundles of comics, American comics.
Yeah,
and it'd literally be like a lottery of what you'd get.
Yeah,
and so I got an X-Men comic, which I think would be in the like 180 odds. So it had like Wolverine, Rogue, Colossus, and it was darker.
Yeah.
And it was just completely different. So I'm reading this kind of 60s style, very simplistic, and then suddenly reading like, you know, skipping ahead like 25 years. And so it was great. But I kind of very quickly kind of swatted up because it was still accessible. Again, I think Piskor likened it to a soap opera, which I feel is a really good simile where, you know, you can dip into a soap opera that you've never seen before, give it a couple of episodes, and you'll get the gist of who people are. And I always felt that with the X-Men, because it is a soap opera. X-Men is a fantastic soap opera.
So where did you come into the X-Men then?
For my sins, I watched, like, the movies, and I read, like, X-Men 2.
We all,
I was on the other day, wasn't it? We watched it. It was a great film.
I'm looking at Neil because I'm waiting for him to just talk about the movies in particular.
I mean,
no. It's just you being in London. Occasionally, you get like amazing celebrity spots, and my favorite ever celebrity spot was just seeing Brian Cox.
Ah, right.
Stryker,
William Stryker himself, walking along the shoreline of the Thames. It does have a beach, depending on the tide. And, like, he was being filmed from, like, a long way away for, I don't know, some upcoming thing. But the temptation, as soon as I clocked him, to just shout, Wolverine! Like, from the end of X2, was just... It took a lot of willpower not to.
I mean, I'm slightly mad that you didn't.
I know, I'm mad at myself.
I'm sure he would have loved it.
Oh, yeah.
He might have done.
I'm sure the whole film crew would have loved it as well.
Bless him. So you watched the movies.
So I watched movies, and then I started to sort of dip my toe in to a few rungs, like particularly Claremont. And it actually, like, it would be Dark Phoenix was probably the first big one that I read, and then Days of Future Past. Other various just ones that I could find. I dipped my toe in to Joss Whedon's, was that Astonishing X-Men?
Yeah. Were you not so keen on that?
I was not.
Dear.
That was the GIF, wasn't it? That's what they adapted some of that for The Terrible Last Stand, where it's the mutant cure.
Yeah. What was it? Yeah. And
did you read the Grant Morrison run?
If this was a question about Batman, then yes, I could say that. But no, I did not read the Grant Morrison X-Men run. And then from there, I just haven't really read any in years. But I mean, if you want to learn about X-Men, then other than this podcast, Comic Book Girl 19 on YouTube has done a fantastic documentary about sort of the making of the X-Men.
She's a bit of a fan, isn't she?
She is
just a little bit of a fan.
Huge fan. She's incredible. So yeah, I kind of enjoyed that, and I watched the cartoon when I was a kid, you know, so I just kind of like flit in.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember which came first, the cartoon or the movies, like over
cartoon.
Here.
Yeah. Cartoon.
Just
that
cartoon.
Was,
yeah.
That was my, I was aware of the X-Men, but I've always found it impenetrable. And then just the cartoon came along and just like instantly, like you understand who they all are from the intro. And, like, I think maybe we got one or two seasons of it before it was, like, syndicated to Saturday morning before it was lost.
Yeah.
I think originally we didn't, because I was working at a comic shop at the time, and I was a huge X-Men fan, but I was kind of lapsing from the comics at that point because Claremont had left.
Yeah.
And the TV show started, and I remember it was hard to get hold of. Like, you know, in the UK, you'd kind of get it on Saturday mornings, but then would be like a year behind the US. Like, the US ran for a few series. They did all the big storylines as well.
Mm. Yeah. So, like, that was the big thing for me. And then, as you've just discovered, the internet was just starting. And there was a very famous video that went around, like, before the days of, like, Flash, before the days of, like, YouTube, there was a very famous video that went around of basically, like, a couple of guys overdubbing old X-Men episodes where the famous saying, "I'm the Juggernaut, bitch," comes from. And like that sort of kept the spark alive as the movie started. So like when you get that line in the X-Men movies, you're like, ah, an Easter egg of sorts while still being incredibly preposterous. So I've always had time for the X-Men movies. And we've been blessed with like another one run has ended, another one is started. Now the other one come back to end properly with Logan, but watched all the X-Men films. I've watched their spin-off films. I've played a lot of their games.
Oh, God, yeah, I played a few of the games, actually.
What is that one that you'll defend to the death that was really bad?
The X-Men, the game that came between X-Men 2 and X-Men 3 was actually legit pretty good. That was the game that they wrote off Nightcrawler in because he wasn't in the third film, so they wrote him off in the game.
Oh, poor Nightcrawler.
Well, I think it was a thing that like, he didn't want to do the makeup and stuff anymore.
Yeah, I don't blame him. I don't blame him. Frasier was all for it, but not coming. No,
not coming.
He's not had enough of it.
I'm not coming in today.
Oh!
Hey. I would not defend X-Men Destiny, if that is the game you're referring to.
It is.
Silicon Knights.
You said you'd die for X-Men Destiny.
That's the one I was thinking
with Nolan North as Cyclops, is it? That was a game that they had to recall because of the lawsuit with Unreal, right?
I believe so.
Silicon Knights illegally used some engine tech in the making of that game
and
Too Human. And all of the copies were destroyed. So I have a copy.
Do you still have yours?
Yes!
Is it collectible, do you think?
I don't know. It's a part of gaming history, though. It's like the PT of the Xbox 360 and PS3 era.
Do you remember the buzz that came along with, like, obviously X-Men Wolverine came and everyone was like, oh, amazing, Wolverine's getting his own standalone film. And then it was just like,
The game was good.
But the game...
The game was
so
weirdly
good.
Was so good and so violent and just everyone was like, oh, God, he's got an arm off.
It starts off with you jumping out of a helicopter, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You're just like impaling someone as you land.
In deepest, darkest Wakanda.
Was it Wakanda?
Was it? It was set in Wakanda.
I thought it was Vietnam.
The movies dabbled in there, but a bit of the movie and definitely the game was set in Wakanda. That was my first ever exposure to the Black Panther's homeland.
Wow.
Yeah. It fascinated me up until I'd seen the actual Black Panther movie. Every time Marvel just... Wakanda basically was used as a throwaway African nation for these sorts of like projects. Obviously Black Panther had his own thing, but Wakanda appeared here and there and everywhere, and I was just like, so this is where adamantium comes from. Fascinating. Tell me more. Oh god, he's got a leg off. You know, it was an alright game. I think the hyper-violence helped.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much been it. So I've never been able to delve into the X-Men comics. Very much aware of all the characters thanks to the movies and cartoons. Until
today.
A sheriff rode into town by the name of Ed Pisker.
So there you go. So we've got the first volume.
Yes.
Which adapts...
Huge!
It's huge, but it's issue one and two of the Grand Design series, which takes you up from what begins... Well, that's the thing.
At the beginning.
Because it kind of, what he's done, he's kind of taken all these threads and all these plot lines over like 30, 40 years of comics and chronologically lays them out and ties it all together. Jeez. And somehow makes it like readable. Like a lot of the bigger moments, he can just kind of cover in a couple of panels.
Yeah.
It's not as in depth.
There were certainly some things I felt as I was reading that he... that you know becomes important later, like the Hellfire Club and all the connotations and references to the Dark Phoenix and stuff. Some of that felt just a bit thrown in and like just barely touched upon.
Yeah, I think if you didn't know anything about it, you might just be a bit...
What the hell's that? but everything else was a really comprehensive introduction to just the core of X-Men and all of their biggest plot storylines.
Stuff you never even thought you needed to know, like... who built all the fancy stuff, like the Danger Room and the Blackbird jet.
Mm.
It was a character called Forge, who wasn't introduced till the 80s, so it's kind of, that's what he was doing. That's how they met.
Got to see some of Xavier's parents.
Yeah, where he got his money from.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
Never really touched on in the films.
Yeah. Links him to the Starks. So Charles Xavier's dad was a contemporary of Howard Stark.
Mm-hmm.
He even throws in a deep cut where, so we had a discussion earlier, like, I think it's pronounced Namor, but you thought it was Namor, but I've always called him Namor, so.
I only said that because I work with a guy called Tummel, and that's...
No one's ruled out they're not the same person.
No.
No, but Namor.
Has he got ankle wings?
Have you seen him in a swimming pool?
Yeah.
I have not, actually. Well, I'm going to make notes.
Yeah. But yeah, so basically Namor is arguably the first mutant character that ever appeared in Marvel Comics, which was in the 40s.
Yeah.
And Stan Lee and Jack Kirby brought him back in the 60s. But Ed Piskor uses that, talks about one of the very old Marvel comics where he flooded New York, which happens in comics. And if you read those comics and you go, all right, he flooded New York, fine. But there's a whole bit where they're talking about how it went on for ages and damage it caused, and it's like,
10 years of stuff.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, that's pretty cool. And again, he uses a lot of stuff that wasn't brought in until the 80s. So you have like Mr. Sinister, who had been meddling around and stalking Scott Summers.
Long-suffering Scott.
Yeah, exactly.
Scott.
Yeah. So he kind of links it all together. He links in a group of mutants and aliens who are obsessed with the Phoenix Force, which again wasn't introduced till the 70s, so it's kind of he's kind of added stuff to stuff that's already been in and given them motivations, character motivations.
That thing that I was in, like, so when you pick up the, from what I can remember, when you pick up the collection of like Dark Phoenix, you just sort of understand that the Phoenix Force, you don't know what it is, like the whole stuff about the Phoenix Force actively searching for a host.
Yeah,
I don't ever remember reading about that.
Well, no,
it's just a thing that Jean has.
It's just something they come up with in the 70s, but with this, it's kind
like
of saying...
It's context, and it's just,
As soon as she started using her powers back on Earth, it was, like, alerted to her, and it's kind of like, that's cool.
Yeah, super cool. She does
180. And Ed Piskor even has done a good job of making some of the lamest characters that I'd long since forgotten. He's not shied away from them. So you have, like...
Who's the lame ones? They're all cool.
Conquistador. and one even when I was like when I first read this stuff like 9 or 10, like Jacko Diamonds,
Oh, yeah. He was... Yeah. He was sucked, didn't he?
But even though they sucked back then, but it's I actually was like quite pleased he'd brought them back. So I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that lame ass. You know, so it's quite fun. But yeah, and he actually, probably worth saying, the introduction to the book is he said it's a love letter, and that's so, I think it's so clear.
So evident, yeah. And he does it via the Watcher as well.
Yep.
Who we'll be talking about every time we talk about a Marvel comic, chances are the Watcher is going to appear.
Yeah.
If you watched, was it Guardians he appears in at the end? Guardians 2?
Well, there's a group of Watchers, isn't there?
A group of Watchers, yeah. Essentially an omnipotent race of beings or being in the Marvel Universe that just...
watch everything.
Watch
it. Record it.
Yeah. So that was nice. It's like, oh, I did not expect it to start this way.
Exactly. That's kind of the framing. So the first volume finishes... at the end, the original classic run of X-Men. At that time, if I remember rightly, Marvel went into reprint. So I think for a few years, it was just reprinting earlier stuff until it was rebooted with the, you can probably buy a house if you have this, is giant-size X-Men, which introduced like Nightcrawler, Storm, Batguy, Wolverine.
Oh, yeah, they do have like the briefest of references to Storm in this.
Yeah, well, actually, that again, that is from a Claremont one. That was... in the 70s, or it might be in the early 80s, there was a story of, like, you know, how Charles first encountered, like, the first evil mutant, or what he considered to be an evil mutant, which was Amal Farouk, who was the Shadow King. He's one of my favourite villains, who I'm actually really pleased is the sort of main villain in the Legion TV series, which you should totally check out, it's brilliant. And so the scene there, he's in Cairo, and a young urchin nicks his wallet, and it's basically, it's going to be Storm, she'll become Storm. So that stuff he's actually put in chronological order, so you get that stuff.
Incredible undertaking. I mean, he's obviously a very talented guy. I might actually have to add, you know, the hip-hop stuff onto my Christmas list off the back of this.
Yeah, and it's unusual, I feel, for Marvel, because it is very, he's an indie comic artist, and it has that feel of something you'd get from Fantagraphics or Drawn and Quarterly, and... so his art style is probably not to everyone's liking. And I'll be totally honest, when I saw the covers for the first two issues on the shelves, I was kind of...
I didn't get it,
I wasn't taken.
Yeah.
But the collection is giant size, so it is like treasury size, so it's kind of... what?
Yeah, imagine the size of your laptop.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's that size, so it kind of... It called to me, a big yellow colour, and you've got the kind of evolution dynamic ending with Cyclops with his optic blast.
Oh, Scott.
So it's kind of a well-designed cover. It certainly works. It got my attention.
Mm.
And as we've already discussed, it passed the smell test.
Passed it. Flying colours.
Got a whiff of that and I thought, I'm going to buy that.
I mean, don't get me wrong, listeners. I mean, it's not going to answer that question of how does Cyclops not burn his own eyelids when he blinks, but, you know...
Yeah.
Science.
But for a standard, like, if you're gonna make inroads into, like, getting into the X-Men universe, like, you really... will not find a better starting point than this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's either this, an enjoyable, cohesive journey, or a 20,000-word-long blog post that someone's written called How to Get Into X-Men. Do it this way.
Yeah, please do it this way.
So you've got Volume 1's out now.
Yeah.
The plan is that during July 2018, you'll get issues 3 and 4, which I think will then be collected towards the end of 2018. And then at the end of 2018, beginning of 2019, we get the final issues, 5 and 6, which again will be collected. I'd say hold out for the collection because they look fantastic. And getting 3 of those on your shelf will be quite cool. So I'd say that's a fantastic way of getting into the X-Men. In a future episode, we will probably dive deep into a particular storyline. I know you're keen on covering the Dark Phoenix.
I love the Dark Phoenix.
So
that's the storyline.
It's brilliant. I would want to throw in the Mutant Massacre as well. I don't know if you've read that stuff.
Oh, I haven't.
Again, when I read that back in the day, that to me was getting into the X-Men, and they killed a lot of people off. we'll check it out.
Let us know what you think. If you picked it up, do let us know. If you're already a fan of the X-Men comics, shout us out with your favourite storylines, characters.
Let us know what you think we should be covering.
Yeah. Are we crazy to do the Dark Phoenix? Let us know. Is it going to turn people off? That's the last thing we want. Tell us now or forever hold your peace.
Well, they're going to do a movie of it again. They're going to try again, aren't they? So they made a balls of it with The Last Stand.
No, you're all right. Yeah. Sorry, I was automatically about to defend Apocalypse then, and you said The Last Stand. I was like, fair enough. Fair enough.
Yes, Neil was a big fan of Apocalypse for some bizarre reason.
Apocalypse apologist.
Yeah.
Gladly. I don't see what people's problem with that film is. I thought it was probably the most enjoyable.
Just the beginning, the middle, the end.
How dare you? How dare both of you?
You know what? You know what says a lot about that movie?
Hmm.
I don't remember anything that happened in it.
I'm glad. I'll gladly walk you through.
I remember that Olivia Munn was Psylocke. Was she?
Yes, and she's coming back. Apparently, she had nothing to do in the last one.
By popular demand.
Oh, so, you know what, we've actually, if you want to hear us rant, or me and Neil rant about X-Men Apocalypse, you can check out an episode of the BAM Comics Cast on iTunes and other places.
Everywhere you get your podcasts.
Where he'll defend it and I will slate it.
And that,
but anyway.
That war is not going to be settled today. The important thing is there is now an accessible X-Men graphic novel that you should go and read, everyone.
Mm. And the collection, we haven't really touched on this. The collection actually has the first issue of the X-Men from 1963. So you have the grand design. You've got Pisker's lovely little storyline where he's put everything together. And then as a kind of contrast to how far comics have come, they've put in the first issue of X-Men.
By Stan Lee and Jack Kirby.
By Stan Lee. And boy, howdy.
So, yes. So, I read this back in the day, and I had a refresher, and I deliberately didn't want to say anything to you. But, yes. So, Lucy.
No, I mean, like, it's a product of its time. But, my God, the dude's perving on Jean Grey. Like, Jean getting her costume for the first time, and then one of them says... They're perving on her as she's changing.
Yeah.
And then they say, oh, it's like she was poured into it. And then at some point, Beast, like, kisses her on this...
He goes full Trump, doesn't he?
He tries to...
I can't help it. I just kiss her.
Plant one on her.
Yeah.
And she goes, nope, uses her powers to sort of fling him away. But it's a bit...
Yeah.
It's a bit... But, you know, that... They sort of set Magneto up as well. You have that first sort of altercation with him. I forgot how much of a hard-ass... Xavier is.
Yeah.
They really softened him over the years. At the beginning, he's just very much like X-Men to me in 50. He was obsessed with numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
In 15 seconds. You have 3 seconds to do this.
Yeah.
Too late.
They add layers to him. But he's a bit
douche.
He
does get layers. But no, it is quite nice to sort of see where everything began.
So I'm kind of curious whether they're going to do something similar for the second and third volumes, whether they're going to add, like, a classic. So I'm guessing they'll probably throw in giant-size X-Men.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that would make
with the next
sense.
One. But then I don't know what era the third book's going to do. If that's going to be, like, late 80s or, you know, is that post-Dark Phoenix? I'm assuming that the next storyline will end with the end of Dark Phoenix. I was about to spoil it if you hadn't. You know what happens.
Just put Apocalypse in. It's my advice.
If you had your way, this would be the Apocalypse Defence Force podcast.
It's the cartoon's fault. I fondly remember Apocalypse from that. And it's just, anyway, that's a different podcast. Again, really, if you're looking to get into X-Men, this is the most accessible way you're going to do it. Please do pick it up. Again, let us know if you're a big X-Men fan, if there's anything you think we should be reading and indeed reviewing. Other than that, thanks for listening. Join us next time for more of the same. In the meantime, you can catch us on BAM Comic Cast on all forms of social media.
Wow. Twitter and Facebook.
They're the ones that matter.
I'll do something with the Instagram.
We have got an Instagram. Yeah.
When I remember the password, I'll sort it out, everyone.
I love Apocalypse.
Damn, you're good.
Rumbled.
It's just you better run, Charles.
Deep face.
See if you can find that on YouTube. That's some homework for you. In the meantime, you can find me at Neil Gortz with a Z on Twitter.
I'm at Lucy James Games.
And I'm on Stoon Army.
Yeah, you are. All right, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Ow, my helmet.